A venerable blog site covering all aspects of digital publishing, Telluride posts on a host of topics from e-readers and other physical devices to innovative virtual libraries. A recent item documented the curious repercussions of Amazon's return policy for e-books. For 20 years, in fact, Telluride has served the publishing and reading communities as a go-to source for news and commentary. Welcome to Copyright Clearing Center's podcast series. My name is Christopher Keneally, host of Beyond the Book. A seasoned freelance reporter, Dan Eldridge has filed from around the globe on a host of subjects, spanning business, music, real estate, and travel. Just a month ago, he joined the ranks of the full-timers, though, as Telluride's editor-in-chief. He joins me now from his office in Philadelphia. Welcome to Beyond the Book, Dan.
Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for having me on the program. It's good to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have a chance to speak with you. We're looking forward to the latest news from Telluride, both what you've been publishing online, but also what's been going on there at the office. We'll tell people briefly about your background. In addition to Dan's role at Telluride, he is a managing editor for the Consumer Technology Publishing Group, both owned by the North American Publishing Company. Formerly the Pittsburgh City Paper's music editor, Dan's worked as the Philadelphia Weekly's copy editor, as development news editor at Flying Kite, an online news magazine documenting the growth of the new economy in the greater Philadelphia area, and he was also founding editor of Young Pioneers, a magazine about independent travel culture that the Utney Reader nominated for an Independent Press Award. He's author as well of several travel guides, including Moon Pittsburgh, nominated for a Lowell Thomas Travel Journalism Award, and four Lonely Planet guidebooks to Turkey, Southeast Asia, the Philippines, and New England. Well, certainly a man with a passport full of evidence of his wide travels. But Dan, we can talk about that perhaps in just a bit, but let's start, frankly, with the news from Telluride itself. You've just become editor-in-chief, and there's a lot been going on there at the office.
There has a lot been going on. I've been here for, a little over a month, maybe 6 weeks, something like that now. We had an interesting turn of events a couple of weeks ago. It was a guy by the name of Chris Meadows, who was our senior writer for something like 6 years. He was with the site for years and years before I ever came here. And through a sort of an odd, confusing turn of events, he ended up having to leave the site and moving on to a competitor right around the same time I was brought on. But he has just come back home to the Telluride family. And he's, he's written just one or two posts for us at that time. So we're very happy to have him back. He's sort of a star in the e-book journalism world.
Well, in fact, a name well known to me, and I'm sure to many of our listeners. And I guess it just proves you can't stay away for long.
I suppose not. Yeah. So we've got another gal by the name of Joanna Cabot. She's our senior writer. They're both really, really well known in this sort of e-books, tablets, e-reading universe. And it's still a small world. The people who are really serious about this and who know absolutely everything about it, and believe me, many of these people know absolutely everything about it, more than I do, to some degree. I'm still relatively new at this, but we're just kind of getting up and going on this sort of new version of Telluride. Of course, the site was founded by somebody else, a guy by the name of David Rothman, and it's gone through a few different iterations. So this is sort of the Telluride 2.0 or Telluride 3.0, you might say. So
Changes
ahead.
Well, even the name does conjure up a time before the internet, because in fact Telluride goes back to those very, very early days, and what we are seeing, of course, is an explosion in e-publishing, both on the device side of things and in the application, I'll call it, side of things, where various forms of e-publishing are making their way into the consumer marketplace. What are some things you're hoping to follow in the coming months? Any particular issues that are particularly striking for you?
There are so many right now. You know, I think because the technology is changing so quickly, I think the exact same thing is happening in this e-book and e-reading space that was happening in the internet space maybe 5 years ago, and that's that so many of the laws that need to be applied don't necessarily exist. And so we're sort of getting to witness this sort of online history right now as these laws are being written. We just saw this Google Books scanning case. The litigation recently ended with the Association of American Publishers. Now, they still have a case pending with, I believe it's the Authors Guild, but they had something like a 7-year litigation going on with, I think, 5 major publishers over whether or not Google was allowed to scan publishers' books and keep them in their in what is now known as their library project, and that litigation came to an end. There was some sort of a settlement about, I think, a week and a half ago. So that's been an interesting one to watch. Of course, the Department of Justice case with 5 of the so-called Big 6 publishers is another one we've been interested in following. The ebook price fixing case. So all these cases are going on right now, and they're going on. They're going up to the highest levels of the courts. They're so interesting to watch because these laws are laws that need to exist because the internet and electronic devices it's a part of everybody's everyday life right now. But the laws don't exist, and so we have to kind of go through the process and watch these things become laws for the first time. And it's fascinating. There's so many things happening all the time. There are new e-readers coming out. There are new devices. There seem to be a half a dozen new Android tablets coming out every other week. So there's tons of interesting stuff to watch, and I think that's why it's so fun for the people that follow all these e-reading sites that are popping up as well. And there's quite a few. We have quite a bit of good competition out there.
Right. Well, that's a pretty healthy environment on both sides of things. And, the point you're making about the very, incredibly fast pace of technology development, and it's copyright law and everything else trying to keep up with it, that's the real challenge.
Right. Right.
And as well, I think the other challenge is for publishers to, entirely devote themselves to the mindset of the digital space. And this is difficult because for, obviously, centuries, they've been working in a physical space, brick-and-mortar bookstores, but also the actual physical object of a book. And this is what intrigued me about one of your recent posts, and that was this curious return policy for ebooks. Which strikes everybody, I think, is rather surprising that you could return an ebook. Tell us what you found.
Right. I'd actually learned about this a couple of months ago, and for the lives trying to remember where I learned this, and for the life of me, I can't remember where. But this has been around for a while. Apparently, Amazon's Kindle store, which of course is where you buy all your ebooks that Amazon sells, does have a return policy, and the return policy is 7 days. Basically, if you buy an ebook for any reason, you can return it to Amazon for any reason, no questions asked, up to 7 days. It's an interesting thing because you're essentially returning something that really doesn't exist, right? I mean, when you buy an ebook from Amazon, you don't necessarily own it. That's another discussion for another time. You're really kind of renting it in a sense, but it's just a collection of ones and zeros. Now, the reason I wrote this post, I'm always online looking for interesting conversations and other blog posts from other bloggers or journalists about the ebook space, and I stumbled onto this post. From a self-published author. I can't remember his name. Derek Haynes is the guy. He's a blogger and a self-published author, and he has, something like a dozen self-published books that he sells through Amazon's Kindle Direct Publishing program. That's essentially a program where anybody who's a self-published author can go on and get their books up there. I don't think it's too terribly hard to get into the Kindle Direct Publishing program, although I've never tried it, so I guess I really wouldn't know. But at any rate, he was complaining on his blog that he's seen the numbers of returns of his books going through the roof recently, and his assumption was that he's getting scammed. His assumption was that he had so many readers that are buying his book from the Amazon Kindle store, reading it within 7 days or less, and then returning it. And of course, the thing about that, a lot, when I posted this post about it, a lot of my readers commented exactly as I thought they would by saying, look, these people are not reading his book and returning it. They're doing things like accidentally buying it. These are people who maybe are seeing his books in the Amazon Prime library. And Amazon Prime, if you're not familiar with that, is sort of a subscription service. And one of the benefits you get from that is you're able to rent one book a month. And this guy, Derek Haynes, I guess the way I understand it is his books are in this Amazon Prime service. So some people maybe are thinking that they're just renting his book and they end up being charged for it. And then this this isn't just this Derek Haynes. This is anybody, of course. A lot of times on Amazon, you might be under the impression that you're just clicking on a button to get the free sample sent to your e-reader, but instead you accidentally buy it. And I think that the reasons like that are why Amazon has this policy. A lot of people buy books accidentally. They don't necessarily mean to, so Amazon lets them return it. And sure, it's a loophole. You're going to have a very small percentage of people stealing books, because of course if you own an Amazon Kindle, it's very easy to go into the documents folder on your Kindle and just drag that book right over to your PC, return it within 7 days, and you've got yourself a free book. Although many of the people that commented on the story also said, you know, Amazon will terminate your account if you abuse this policy, just like any other brick and mortar retail store will probably at least attempt to stop doing business with you if you continue buying their things and returning them over and over and over again. You know, a woman in the comments made an interesting point. She said, you know, I know a lot of women who buy really expensive $200, $300 dresses, wear them out, you know, to a cocktail party or whatever, and then have them cleaned and return them. And of course, we've all heard stories like that. You know, and I think everybody's got a different point of view when it comes to things like this. But yeah, it is interesting that you can return something that is really a digital product that, in a sense, doesn't physically exist. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed it is. And unfortunately, when we start talking about the internet, inevitably we talk about things like spam and all the rest of it. And it seems to invite this kind of behavior. Right now we are talking to Dan Eldridge. He is the new editor-in-chief for TellerRead. And he joins us from his office in Philadelphia. Talking about TellerRead, Dan, tell us about the kinds of contributions. It's a blog which, as I say, covers everything from physical devices to virtual libraries. And what kinds of submissions are you open to receiving there as an editor?
I tell you what, we are very open to receiving just about anything as long as it has to do with this e-reading space. And to be honest with you, I have a pretty wide interpretation of what that includes. Now, if you look at TellerRead's, homepage, I'm going to go ahead and pull it up here. It says, news and views, news and opinions, in other words, on ebooks, libraries, publishing, and related topics. Now, the reason we mention things like libraries is because the man who founded the site, David Rothman, he now works on a project called LibraryCity.org, and he's interested in bringing a national digital public library system to the company, or to the country, rather. That's sort of his obsession right now, and so, of course, that was something that he wrote a lot about. But as TellerRead has evolved, and as the ebook and e-reading space has evolved, of course, as I'm sure you know, libraries are always in the news in terms of ebooks because libraries are having so many issues with, especially the big six publishers, getting digital copies of their books. So many of the big six publishers either won't lend to libraries or they will lend to them, but once the library rents the book out to a consumer, say, five or six times, the book disappears. Some of the big six publishers charge two or three times as much to libraries as they would charge to a consumer. So libraries are sort of on the cutting edge when it comes to this sort of thing. So that's something else we talk about as well. And in terms of publishing, I've always personally been interested in publishing myself. But of course, you know, the traditional publishing industry is just changing, as we all know, in many, many ways, and has been for a long time now. Initially because of the internet, but now because of e-books and e-readers and e-publishing. So we're interested in all those ways that the publishing industry itself is changing because of these devices that everybody seems to own now. We run some opinion, some essays, so a little bit of everything, really.
Well, you know, you were a freelance editor, or freelance writer, I should say, for many years, and an editor.
Quite a long time, yeah.
Yeah, and something I was myself at one time, and so I understand what it's like to interact with editors, to come and approach them with what I hope will be an idea that they'll latch onto and with the suggestion that they'll want to publish. What kind of interactions are you hoping to have with your freelancers? You're hoping to create a stable of regular contributors as well as the particular, you know, somebody with a particular idea or kind of a one-off?
You know, to be honest with you, a little bit of both. Now we have two regular contributors. We have a senior writer and I mentioned Chris Meadows earlier. He's sort of a senior contributor. So we have a couple of writers. One who's a woman by the name of Joanna Cabot. She's an elementary school teacher living in Toronto, actually, and they write for us on a fairly regular basis. Aside from that, we have a couple of people who are fairly well known in this ebook world and have been around for a long time on the sort of cutting edge of this stuff. You know, before you know when people were still reading books on Palm Pilots way back before many of us even knew that sort of thing was possible. A man by the name of John Jeremy, who writes about apps and sort of more technical stuff for us. Just about every Sunday, he files a piece. Aside from that, every now and again, I just get a random email from a random reader, a fan, and sometimes they will say, "Hey, I wrote something on my blog that doesn't get anywhere near as much traffic as yours, but I think it might fit. Would you be interested in it?" Sometimes people just shoot me an email and say, "Hey, I have an idea. Would you like me to write this up?" And I'm open to both. You know, I think in the traditional freelance journalism world, the idea is you pitch an editor with an idea, and if they say yes, then you go ahead and write it. But frankly, I'm open to people sending me stuff they've already written, whether it's something original or something that's appeared on their blog, and saying, "Hey, would you take a look at it?" And if it's relatively well written and it's well argued, if it's an opinion piece, or it's well researched, if it's a news piece, it's a good chance we'll go ahead and run it.
Well, you know, I hope you'll take any of my submissions and as equally as you would anybody else's, but it'd be great to see something published in Telluride sometime.
Absolutely.
I would enjoy that opportunity. Dan Eldridge, editor-in-chief of Telluride and managing editor for the Consumer Technology Publishing Group, both owned by the North American Publishing Company. Thanks so much for joining us today on Beyond the Book.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Absolutely. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.